a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, people are looking sometimes at the wrong medium for feedback. I think that there's an over-reliance, for example, on blog comments. You know, blog comments are just an echo chamber. You have a couple of very strong personalities that get in there, and they dominate. We haven't figured out, journalism hasn't figured out how to tame that and to make it more of an egalitarian or a less threatening place for people to go and leave their comments. I mean, I'm intimidated by blog comments.
Welcome to Innovation and Leadership, where I interview uncommonly high achievers like top investment fund managers, elite special operations soldiers, startup CEOs who sold their companies for billions of dollars, pro athletes, Hollywood filmmakers, really as many different kinds of experts as I can. The whole idea is to hear how they did it and then what advice they have for the rest of us that can be applied to the organizations we're trying to grow and innovate. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's show. This is part two of our interview with Christopher Elliott. If you didn't catch part one, please go back and listen to his years of experience at MSNBC and CBS and National Geographic Traveler, and these days both USA Today and Washington Post and Elliott.org, his advocacy group. Did I hit the main points there? Did I miss any good ones?
No, you got them all. Thanks.
Well, I kind of want to pick up where we were ending off in episode one. And, you know, this idea of as the world of journalism is changing and as, you know, there are people who are seeing, you know, the example of somebody like you. You know, you look at Elliott.org and it's a nonprofit that's helping people's lives with the customer service issues and the other ways that consumers are not being protected. But it is kind of a media company as well, because you've created such good original content, exclusive original content. For somebody who's come to the conclusion, man, I think our brand needs to do that. We need to follow that example. What are some of your pieces of advice that you feel like aren't just out there on a million blogs or in a million keynote speeches about doing something like this?
Oh, I don't know, because I don't listen to all those keynote speeches and read all the blogs. So maybe you might find something really good out there. I think that a lot of times people will go about creating a media enterprise, and they won't let it evolve organically. So they'll just maybe force it. Mm. And I've tried it both ways, where I've tried to create something and you know, do market research and then say, okay, this is a product that I think people will want. And that doesn't really work so well, for at least in my line of work. What you want to do is quiet down and let the readers talk to you.
Hold on, are you getting arrested?
Here. Oh my gosh, they're coming for me, Jeff. it's live radio, right? You never know what you're going to hear. I think that in my best experience has been listening to what people want and then creating a product and then allowing that product to evolve over time. And I'll give you an example of that. About 20 years ago, everyone wanted a quick Q&A column, and to a certain extent, this is still true, but they wanted quick Q&A column, took a consumer problem, and then fixed it. Those did very well. The early part of the 21st century, so about 10 years ago, we had blogging. People wanted the navel-gazing. That tended to do very well. So you could post something that was 350 words that just said, I saw a story today, and it was stupid, and I'm so much better than this, and so that's why you should be reading this blog. Thank you very much. Goodbye. And you still see people doing that today. There are some
know, very well-known loyalty program bloggers that do that, where they'll go and find something that's done in the mainstream media, they'll post a hyperlink to it, and they'll tell you why it's so stupid, which is really unfortunate, because it doesn't really help anyone. It maybe brings in a few more clicks for that blogger, but it's not adding value to the media ecosystem in any way. So if I had just continued doing what I was doing 20 years ago, I think that I would probably be irrelevant by now. But over time, readers have told me, you know, maybe you should be trying to give us more information about how to prevent a problem like this, or, you know, whatever. And so our stories have really evolved from these quick Q&As to much more long-form journalism. And the subject matter has become much sharper, too. I used to go online, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, I would go online and I would rant about it. That kind of has a limited shelf life, and it doesn't really help anyone. Now, everything is very focused on a consumer problem, how to prevent it, and then we go and fix it. And they can run anywhere from 1,000 to 2,500 words long, which is really long-form journalism. My advice just to you would be to listen to the readers. Don't think that you have the solution and then just stick with it. You might have the solution now, but I guarantee you that in a couple of years' time, the readers' needs or wants will change. And if you don't keep up with that, you will be irrelevant.
Well, you know, I'm really glad you brought this up, because it does make me think differently. You know, I think about advice out there of, if you're going to get serious about this in the organization and you guys are really going to bake this into your DNA, and it's not just going to be like, you know, that bolt-on content marketing thing that you guys are going to start doing, where you hire some like 22-year-old intern to put fluffy Facebook posts out a lot, right? Like, if you're going to get serious about this, there is this advice out there, which I see the wisdom of have an editorial mission statement. Like, you know, you need to rally the troops in one direction so that this isn't just like a random buffet of stuff, right? Like, we're not putting out content to put out content. It needs to be narrowly focused on something that's going to help our ideal client. But what I don't hear much of, that I feel like is equally as wise, I feel like you just brought up, of like, and then be open and then be responsive. And it sounds dead obvious, but I don't know that many of us have built in mechanisms for questioning, was our original editorial mission statement wrong? Or, you know, like, how many of those assumptions have not panned out? I don't think a lot of my friends or clients have that scheduled in. Like, you know, we're probably going to start this new investment fund, and we totally want to do this stuff, teaching regular people Warren Buffett principles so they can make their own decisions, right? And I love that stuff. And I've made a lot of assumptions about how much other people will, but, you know, certainly haven't been thinking about making sure to schedule the quarterly meeting to see what the responses are being, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Well, one of the things that I do as a consumer advocate is I always try to go back to the mission statement and say, is the company following its own mission? Not editorial mission, just regular mission. And one of the things that I found is that mission statements do change. They don't change every quarter, but they can change year by year. You have additions that are made and, unfortunately, sometimes subtractions. The assumption that I think you should make, or that your listeners should make, is that their editorial mission statement is wrong. You should assume it's already wrong. It's not a question of, is it wrong now, but at what point will it be wrong? Maybe it works for us now, but in a year or 6 months, still going to be correct or relevant. And you're talking about feedback. You know, the interesting thing is that when it comes to content, a lot of companies think it's just a one-way street, where they're broadcasting content out and trying to somehow persuade their customers to buy more or to do something. They want to. There's a call to action somewhere, and that's not really where the value is. If you have an email list, and by the way, I would recommend getting an email list, because you don't want to be dependent on Facebook or Google for your audience. You would send maybe an email newsletter out, but it's so easy to solicit feedback from people. You could put a question into the newsletter. You could have a story that has a provocative ending with a poll. There's any number of things that you can do to solicit feedback, but that's what you really want to do. You want to start a dialogue with your customer and your client, and you want them to tell you what they want. And the more in sync you are with their desires, I think the more successful your editorial mission will be.
I'm just sitting here writing notes to myself. I'm just thinking, you know, we just put out an episode with the chairman of JetBlue Airlines, you know, and that's a big interview for us. We don't usually have, you know, guys who used to be CEOs of $14 billion companies and are now chairman of the board of a different $7 billion company. Like that's definitely an upgrade for us, right? And I was just looking at the posts and I thought, you know, here we are announcing we've done it. But I just saw someone yesterday who actually knows Joel Peterson, and he brought up to me, hey, I saw your post on LinkedIn. I actually know him. We grew up in the same neighborhood as them. And he wanted to like tell me the story about his interaction with Joel, who was pretty inspirational guy, actually. And I thought, how easy would it be for us to put a couple questions into those posts that our episodes have come out? Hey, do you have any stories about Joel Peterson that we should be putting up on our site, or just straight out asking, who would you want to hear from next? Who should we be getting for our next guest? That'd be so simple on our part. So I wrote a note saying, Jess, you dummy, how come you're not doing that?
Well, you know, and it would really resonate with your listeners is if they share their JetBlue stories. Tell us about your last JetBlue flight. What do you like about JetBlue? Why are they different from other airlines? Because, you know, JetBlue is different, very different from other airlines, and they do a lot of things really well. I think that people would love to share those stories with you.
That's a great point. Now I do have to go back and change that post.
Sorry, I didn't mean to make more work for you there.
No, but to me, it actually makes it seem like our work could actually become more rewarding by doing that. You know, like there's so many people that pontificate, you need to have a relationship with your audience, you need to build a community, but then they fail to give specifics on what that should look like. And these are just such simple, those are such simple suggestions, but I can immediately see the power of it. And I can actually see how my team would actually like our jobs better because of that. You know, we all like human interaction, right?
Sure, of course. Well, people are looking sometimes at the wrong medium for feedback. I think that there's an over-reliance, for example, on blog comments. You know, blog comments are just an echo chamber. You have a couple of very strong personalities that get in there, and they dominate. We haven't figured out, journalism hasn't figured out how to tame that and to make it more of an egalitarian or a less threatening place for people to go and leave their comments. I mean, I'm intimidated by blog comments. Someone writes something about me, I'm afraid to go into a blog comment, into the comment section, and say, "Hey, I'm the person you're writing about. I'm not a bad guy, you know, whatever it is that I was like, or you got your facts wrong." You know, that's so I know a lot of journalists who so dislike comments that they've removed it from their own blog.
I think what you just suggested is such a great thing, because I also don't want to like get in some public battle with some troll on our website or something, right? But the idea of like inviting a personal email, hey, because I actually am a big JetBlue fan. You know, I'm 6'2", but I've got this really short torso. I've got the legs of a guy who's like 6'8" or 6'9", you know? And so like if I get on Frontier, my back touches the seat and my knees touch the seat in front of me. I have to have my knees at an angle because I don't fit in a seat, right? I love JetBlue. Leather seats in a movie and leather seats in a TV and my legs fit, right? Asking for somebody to write in a personal story about that, and then we get the chance to write them a personal story back instead of this like that. How much more organic and natural, like a real conversation, is that than this public ranting on a blog section or something like that, you know? And then I get the chance to ask them if they want to be on our email list, and I've actually got a real connection with them before I've asked them that, you know? Like how much more like a real relationship is that, right?
Absolutely. Well, and you can now automate so much of that. I mean, you can. We have millions of readers, so I can't afford to,
sure,
to write.
Sure.
I don't have the time to write back personally to everyone. But you can, once they have subscribed, you can create a funnel where you're doing some autoresponders that are very personalized and make people feel like they are special. I know also people who over rely on those and then they don't respond to any of the personal emails, because sometimes you will get an email that says, "Hey, Jess, I heard your podcast. I'd love to know about this." And then you send like an auto response or something like that. You know, you don't want to do that. But there are.
Yeah, it's definitely a balance beam, right?
So many.
You fall off either side of it.
But yeah, yeah. The personal connection is really important with readers. I have readers who would follow me to the ends of the earth because they feel like they've made a personal connection with me, and they have. And we remember each other's birthdays. We ask about each other's kids. It's a real genuine friendship. And, you know, whenever I'm in town, we visit. I think that that's really the deep connection that you want to get with, whether you're a journalist or whether you're running a company. You want to have those kinds of real diehard customers. I think, you know, going back to JetBlue has that kind of a very loyal following. Because they've done right. They've got the seats that have a humane amount of leg room. They feed you. They give you headsets when you go on the plane. They're nice to you. And just being nice to you means so much.
yeah, have you ever flown Air Canada?
well, yeah, I have. And I got to tell you, you were talking about Frontier. I don't want to badmouth any particular company, but if I had to badmouth one, boy, Frontier, I've got a lot to say about them.
Well, the JetBlue of Canada is called WestJet, right? And it's just so stark when you go on a WestJet flight and they treat you like, you know, it's like Southwest people making jokes or like JetBlue people that treat you with respect. And at Air Canada, you feel like you like snuck your way into like the cool kids club, except none of them want you there, except the them is the staff, you know?
Yeah.
My one redeeming quality
about Air Canada.
I should tell one redeeming Air Canada quality story. I was late for a flight to go try and pitch this big investor in Texas, flying out of Calgary. And regular procrastinating me, I got to the front of the line with like literally 90 seconds to get my bag on that flight, you know, to make the cutoff. And the Air Canada girl looks at me and says, "Well, you bought the ticket for the right day, just the wrong month." I'm just like,
that's good.
Panic stricken, right? And she, you know, she looked at me like a real life human being and within about 30 seconds said, "There's actually a flight on this one. I just moved you. You're going to Texas today." And I could have hugged her at that point because it was an important meeting, you know? So, you know, there's my redeeming Air Canada story. But
yes, yeah, that's a good one.
But I want to talk to you about this email thing. You know, I'm looking, you know, Elliott.org on Twitter's got 80,000 followers. On LinkedIn, I'm seeing 350,000 followers. When you think about this idea of how LinkedIn can change the rules on you at any point, and all of a sudden you may not have access to those people, but, you know, people who have become your email subscribers at Elliott.org, that's a relationship you actually own. It sounds like that's something you focused on and that you have pushed to build your email list, not just relied on your 350,000 followers at LinkedIn.
Yeah, I don't even know why we did it that way. LinkedIn had a program a few years back called the Influencer Program, where they just chose people they thought were really important and made them influencers, and they started to promote all their work. They made me one. I have no idea why, but they made me one. And so everything that I was doing got promoted heavily. If you wrote a story on LinkedIn, that would get heavy promotion. But you're right. They change the rules frequently, and you just never know. Do I have access to them tomorrow? Who knows? The thing about email newsletters is it always felt good to me to have that direct connection and to be able to send a newsletter out. And it also is a really good way of driving traffic to, let's say, a website or to social media.
Yeah, and if you don't spam people, right? Like, I think about all the hundreds of newsletters I've unsubscribed for over the years, right? Versus, like, Ryan Holiday and his book list, or Neil Patel and his like long form blog about actual tactics you can use to improve your business. That's like extremely thought out, and he's used to build his multi-million dollar organizations, right? Those newsletters where they give instead of just try to sell me something. I mean, like, I genuinely feel indebted to those two, and all I am is like one more nameless subscriber on their huge list, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, also having the ability to send a reply and get an immediate reply back.
That's a good point. I've had three personal replies from Ryan Holiday over the years, and it's like, kind of nerdy, but I'm like, I feel a little bit cooler for having had a personal reply to something.
If you're subscribed to my newsletter and you send me an email, you know, try it. Just say, hey, Chris, how's it going? Where are you? That's all you have to do. I'll email you right back. I love doing that. That's just, I love it more than being on Facebook or doing a tweet. I think email is a really great medium for connecting with people.
You know, it's funny because the inner investor in me is immediately going like, well, this won't scale. That we, you know, you can't really do this. Like, you can only do this at a small scale, but not at a big scale, right? And what's funny is, like, I had the CEO of Zoom on, you know, the online video company Zoom. And their CEO had grown to like 140,000 subscribers with zero advertising by doing obsessive customer service. And he told these stories about, like, over and over, like when people would quit Zoom, they would get a personal email from him saying, hey, I'm the president of the company. I'm the CEO of the company, and I'm really sad you're leaving. I would really love to know what we could have improved to get you, to keep you. And then people write back and they're like, ha ha ha, this is a great bot. You know, what a disingenuous autoresponder, right? And he would immediately write back, no, this is really me. Can we hop on a Zoom call right now? I'd like to talk to you. And his just like obsessive care, you know, I felt like he was super obsessive about two things. One, the quality of the call. Hey, this won't break down like Skype. Hey, you won't get robot voice. Like, this is going to be a better experience. And just like extremely unscalable personal contacts on customer service. And he was just a fanatic for it. And, you know, now they're public. I'm looking on them right now. They've got a $19 billion market cap by doing something that sounded to me extremely unscalable, right?
Right. And the interesting thing is that it actually is scalable. It's scalable. If you're listening to this podcast right now, it's scalable. I have a daily newsletter with more than 25,000 subscribers, and you'll get an immediate response from me if you email me from the newsletter. Jeff Bezos publishes his personal email address. Actually, we publish it for him on our site. And I should take a step back and say, one of the public services that we provide is a very exhaustive list of corporate CEOs and their personal contact information.
By the way, where is that? If I'm on Elliott.org, because I think you guys have one of the largest, if not the largest, of that. If I am on Elliott.org, what tab do I go to? Is it just the company contacts?
Yeah, go to company contacts. And you can get, or there's a little search bar right there.
Oh, on the right.
On the left side, I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Under the donate button.
I don't remember where. Yeah. I don't have it in front of me right now.
I'm looking at it.
But my point was that, yeah, Jeff actually answers his email.
Really?
I think it's just jeff@amazon.com. Yeah, he answers his email. And so you're never too big to do something like that, I don't think.
Yeah. I just looked up JetBlue and the CEO, Robin Hayes, emails right here. That's great. Listen, this has been awesome. Maybe to close, I'll give you the option of what you want to answer. Either what's a question that you don't get asked on interviews that you wish people would ask more, or what's one of the best pieces of advice you ever got? You decide.
Oh my goodness. Okay. The first question is one that I always ask people at the end of an interview, which is, you know, was there a question that you wanted me to ask that I didn't ask? And the answer that I get most often to that is, no, you know, I think you hit it all. Thanks a lot. Goodbye. You know, although some of the more prepared subjects will have talking points that they want. So I'm tempted to just do my talking points and say, hey, go to Elliott.org if you have a problem.
Yeah. No, that's
please.
Great.
So I should say definitely, and I know that we've covered this in part one of the interview, but if you have any kind of a consumer problem, anything at all, not just travel, but any problem, exploding appliance, car turned out to be a lemon, and plane ticket that didn't work, whatever, you can come to Elliott Advocacy. At the URL is Elliott.org, ELLIOTT, so it's two L's and two T's, .org. And I or one of my volunteers would be happy to help. We do respond to everyone. And there's also a really wonderful community there of people who care about good customer service. And we've worked really hard over the years to attract people to that community who are caring and helpful and kind. And it's community unlike any other that you'll find online, because so much of what we find online these days is uncivil, nasty, filled with ad hominem attacks and vitriol. And this is very, very different. So I would extend an open invitation to your listeners to come check us out, consider becoming part of the community, at least read some of the stories. I think you'd really enjoy them, and I think it would make you a better consumer. So those are my closing comments.
I love it. Okay. Thanks again for doing this. This has been great.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. Thank you for inviting me.
You bet. Bye, everybody.